Next case is 05-2054, Cuyahoga County Bar Association versus Joseph Morosin. Ms. Mandel.
Mr. Chief Justice, may it please the court, I am Ellen Mandel, and along with Howard Shulman, we represent the relator. This case is very straightforward. Unless the court holds that medical records are inadmissible hearsay, or unless the court holds that as a matter of law, documentary records which show a respondent has given false testimony can never be enough to meet the clear and convincing standard, the court must, at the very least, send this matter back for a trial before a panel willing to consider the relevant evidence. We believe in the alternative that this court has enough information on the record to impose a sanction, to find that Mr. Morosin had in fact lied in his deposition testimony in a prior disciplinary case, and that based upon the medical records, that those dishonest testimony are evident. In this particular case, Mr. Morosin testified in the original disciplinary matter, which was case 04-049 before the Board of Commissioners, he testified at deposition on January 27, 2005. He testified at that time that his medical conditions, which were an episode of high blood pressure leading to a disturbance in his vision, that those conditions existed during the years 2002 and 2003. He produced his medical records after the deposition on February 2nd, 2005, and the trial went forward on the 14th of February. He offered those medical records again as evidence in mitigation. We were not permitted at that particular time to challenge as a matter of a charge against him that he had lied in his deposition testimony because as a matter of due process, that charge was not before the panel. We charged him again on September 1st, 2005. We tried the current case. That case involved another client, Mrs. Korpening, and similar conduct to the prior case, as well as our allegation that he had committed a violation under DR 102A4, dishonesty, relating back to his testimony in the deposition in the first case. During the course of that trial, we made it very clear that we based our allegation on the medical records that he had offered, not only in the first case, but that he submitted in the second case, and that his testimony was inconsistent. Mr. Morosin's testimony was that these medical conditions had continued over the course of time and excused his failure to cooperate in 2004 when three different disciplinary agencies had inquired about client complaints. He also offered them in mitigation for his failure to service those clients during the years 2002 and 2003. During the course of our presentation, one of the panel members inquired as to whether or not we had taken the deposition of the treating physicians. We had not, simply because the medical records are admissible as a hearsay exception under Evidence Rule 8034 and 8036. There was no objection to the admission of the medical records. In fact, the respondent had submitted them himself to use as mitigation evidence. By submitting those records and asking for them to be used in support of mitigation, he's essentially vouched for their accuracy, and he's waived any question as to their admissibility, even if there were a question, and I believe there is not. At that trial, if you review the transcript, he continued to assert falsely that the medical facts were different than the record reflected. He testified in his deposition and again at trial that his severe hypertension and his loss of vision continued over a period of time when the medical records indicated that he had an initial event in January of 2002 of hypertension leading to a disturbance in his vision. He went to the emergency room. He got treatment in the form of medication. He was referred to a cardiologist, Dr. Veloz. Within 5 days, his blood pressure had returned to normal. He continued to see Dr. Veloz over the course of several months, 3 visits, at which time Dr. Veloz released him to his internist. His testimony to the contrary was that even at the time of his deposition in January of 2005, 3 years later, Dr. Veloz was just then at the point of being ready to release him to his internist. What in fact happened was Mr. Morosin never bothered to go see his internist. He didn't see his doctor until it was time for the trial to go forward and he needed a letter from his doctor. And the doctor, Dr. Cass, notes that he hadn't seen his client, his patient since 1994.
Counsel, can you address the legal issue of when there is a unanimous dismissal of the charge, whether we in fact can review it?
Yes, under Rule 5, GovBar Rule 58D, the court is empowered to, this court is required actually, to make such findings and orders as it deems proper. In the Statzer case, the court faced this precise issue. There had been a dismissal, the Bar Association relator had objected, and the matter was presented in full before this court, and the court actually imposed sanctions based on that which was previously dismissed by the panel. This court does a de novo review of the record that is established in Firth, and therefore is empowered to review everything that has gone before it.
So there's no comparable analysis to a criminal charge that when it's dismissed, that's it, it's done?
No. The rule makes it very clear that this court has jurisdiction and makes a de novo review. This isn't like a straight appeal from a magistrate's decision. This is a de novo review by the court of the record. And in this particular case, the transcript of the trial will reveal that we vociferously and in no uncertain terms objected to the dismissal based on an erroneous reading of the rules of evidence, that this could be considered hearsay and inadmissible. Medical records that were being submitted that had been submitted and that were being relied upon in this particular case by the respondent to mitigate his conduct, we believed then and believe now is a miscarriage of justice and sends the wrong message, says that you can lie to the panel, lie to the board, lie essentially to the Supreme Court and get away with it. The fact that this panel found and the board recognized in its decision that the mitigating evidence of the medical condition was considered by both the first panel in the first case and the second panel leaves us in a quandary. If they can use the same medical records, why can't we? We pointed that out to the panel. They did dismiss. We believe they did it erroneously. The question before this court, I believe, is whether or not to remand it for a full hearing on this particular disciplinary charge or whether simply to impose what we believe the appropriate sanction to be, and that is an indefinite suspension.
Mm-hmm. With respect to the rules of evidence applying to the disciplinary process, Section 11 talks about where practicable. Was there a reason for the ruling by the chair of the panel? Was there a reason given?
The chair of the panel found that the medical records were hearsay and therefore not admissible, and also found that it could not prove by clear and convincing evidence that the testimony about the medical condition was inconsistent with the truth of the medical condition simply by relying on the medical records. We assert that that is an incorrect conclusion because the medical records are not only a hearsay exception, but they were being relied upon by the respondent as true. Mm-hmm. And in that particular circumstance, they absolutely have to be sufficient to establish by clear and convincing evidence that his testimony was inconsistent.
So then I assume there was no discussion by the panel with respondent on that issue as to the discrepancy between the medical reports and his statements because they didn't see the medical reports as being evidence. Is that true?
The dismissal came on the panel's own motion, essentially. The panel chair raised the issue of the admissibility after some conference with other panel members. It was very clear at that point that they were inviting the respondent to make a motion to dismiss, and there was virtually no discussion. The ruling was made at that point. We stood up to object, but that was actually just a matter of form at that point. The ruling was made. Respondent was never actually required to argue why it was not a hearsay exception, why he should be allowed to rely on it when we were not.
So, if my understanding is correct, the panel dismissed these medical records for the purpose of showing the discrepancy and therefore the untruthfulness of the respondent's prior deposition testimony. And because they dismissed the medical records based on a hearsay determination, they then found that there was a record devoid of anything that would allow for clear and convincing evidence.
That is correct.
Yet they were used for mitigation for the respondent's behavior with regards to this complaint.
That's also correct. But I will say, in reviewing the actual findings of fact and conclusions of law, they didn't directly reference the medical records in the mitigation section, but what they did was find that a prior panel had found, based on the medical records, that there was a medical condition. The prior panel having no problem with us admitting the medical records. We had no objection. They were submitted by the respondent, and they were accurate medical records, so we had no objection to them. So in essence, by indirection, the panel adopted the finding of mitigation based on the medical testimony, but the only medical testimony was in the form of the medical records. Mm-hmm. There was no doctor deposed or offered, no medical report other than the medical records that we attempted to rely upon.
So there was no attempt in the first hearing then to point out the discrepancy in the medical records. Did you have the deposition at that time? You did not have the deposition at that time, I guess. Is that right?
The deposition was prior to the medical records being presented to us in the first case. Okay. And at that particular time, the panel chair had determined not to permit us to go to amend the complaint. We didn't want to delay the trial because the trial was set actually 17 days after the deposition and 12 days after the medical records were produced, and instructed us that any other matters that we had, including this additional client matter, would be brought as a separate case. And in fact, if all we had had was this additional client, the conduct was contemporaneous with the prior conduct that involved five clients, I believe. And we believed that the sanction that was imposed at that time was appropriate. We wouldn't have brought the second case but for the dishonesty, which we consider to be so egregious and such a slap in the face of the process that we believe not only did it require charges to be brought, but it requires a much more severe sanction. Currently, Mr. Morosin is suspended for 24 months with 18 stayed. On the first case, he is in contempt of the court's suspension order at this time. We believe that regardless of what the court decides to do with the first sanction, whether it imposes the whole 2 years or does something else with it, that this particular conduct, his inability to tell the truth, in the face of evidence that's very clearly to the contrary, requires a much more severe sanction. I'd like to reserve the remaining time for rebuttal.
Thank you, Ms. Mandel. Mr. Petrov.
Good morning, Mr. Chief Justice. May it please this honorable court. I'm Alan Petrov. I represent Joseph Morosin. I would like to address first the procedural issue that Justice Stratton alluded to of opposing counsel. There are dismissals of disciplinary matters, and then there are dismissals. Not all dismissals are alike. Rule 5 of the Government of the Bar contains two sections pertaining to dismissal. It's subsection 6, sections H and I. And section H gives a hearing panel the authority to dismiss a count or a claim if it finds unanimously that there is not clear and convincing evidence to carry the burden. A dismissal of that nature is not reviewable by the Board of Commissioners or by this court. And this court's holdings in Columbus Bar Association versus Doherty and Cuyahoga County Bar Association versus Friedman, which was late last year, are among the cases that support that conclusion. It is akin to a motion for acquittal at the conclusion of a criminal case. And that is the type of dismissal that occurred here. A hearing panel has another option, and that is subsection I of Rule 5, Section 6. And that option is to make findings of fact and conclusions of law, submit those findings, conclusions, and proposed discipline to the full board, which passes on them and then passes it along to you. Sometimes in that process, there will be things called findings of dismissal or recommendations for dismissal, and those matters are reviewable, both by the full board and by this court. And the cases mentioned by Ms. Mandel in her argument are of this latter quality, subsection I cases. So I have stated in my brief, I realized during the halfway through the third quarter on Sunday that I had overstated this in the brief. I argued in the brief that no dismissals are reviewable, and that isn't so. What I should have argued in the brief and what I argue to you now is that Section H dismissals are not reviewable by precedent of this court, and Section I dismissals are. What we have here is a Section H dismissal. It was made on my motion at the end of the Bar Association's case, and it was granted by the unanimous panel.
If we accept your interpretation of Section H and find that this is not reviewable, are we still permitted to review this legal issue of the admissibility of the records so that we can provide guidance to future panels?
I think that would be your prerogative. I did not make the motion for dismissal because of anything to do with the medical records. The relator's case of perjury is really an argument that because Mr. Morosin wasn't going to the doctor all the time for his hypertension, he wasn't being treated. I think that the court can take judicial notice that people reach a certain age, they take a pill every day for this or for that. I know that at least one person in the courtroom does that because he's standing at the lectern, and I'm being treated for that condition whether I see the doctor or not. So the Bar Association's argument was that there were inconsistencies between what Mr. Morosin said he went to the doctor and when he actually went to the doctor, and that he wasn't being treated because he wasn't going to the doctor. But this is a gentleman who practiced law for nearly 20 years without any disciplinary event. He's a sole practitioner, worked in neighborhood offices 6 days a week, late into the evening, worked very hard on a neighborhood type of practice. And then in 2002, all the wheels fell off. And there's no question but that he went to the hospital one day because he couldn't see. The reason he couldn't see is because his blood pressure was 200 over 120. He began treatment for that condition that day, and he continues to be treated for it ever since. So case for perjury was dismissible, in my view, not because of medical records, but because of the lawyers were arguing that we think your blood pressure was normal, you weren't going to the doctor, we think you weren't being treated, we're going to file this complaint alleging perjury.
But that's the facts. I thought Justice Stratton's question was a legal question.
I got carried away.
It's easy to do that. Should we let stand the panel's statement that these medical records are not evidence in a disciplinary hearing?
The panel's statement was oral only. It's not in any official report. I think the records were admissible, and I did not argue that they were not. My motion to dismiss was based on entirely different grounds. Um, Well, I think that I really have concluded the procedural aspect. I would like to address the propriety of the discipline, because I think you do have the prerogative to impose whatever discipline you think is appropriate. Mr. Morosin is currently under an order in an earlier matter of 2 months or 2 years suspension with 18 months of that stayed. That suspension went into effect late October. He is approximately halfway through the six-month period. All conceded, the Bar Association conceded at the proceedings below that but for the claim of perjury, that the appropriate discipline for counts 1 through 5 here, the corporating estate counts, would be a concurrent suspension. The facts of this case are with Ms. Corpening is that Mr. Morosin was asked by Marjorie Corpening to handle the estate of Mr. Corpening. It was a modest estate. It was a sort of work that Mr. Morosin had done many times in his career, something he could do, was capable of doing. He just didn't do it. He neglected the matter, took a $500 fee from her, did not do the estate work, and it was during this 2002-2003 period of time that followed his episode with hypertension and led to depression, lethargy from the medicine, and a mild depression, dysthymic disorder. No harm was caused to the client other than that she needed to retain subsequent counsel to do the work. He refunded the fee belatedly, but did refund it, and there was no prejudice to the client. Mr. Morosin, as in the prior case, compounded his problems by not cooperating with the Bar Association investigation. But be that as it may,
Counsel, isn't he using his medical condition to explain why he didn't cooperate?
Well, yes.
Okay, and here we're talking about activity by the bar last year, not 2002-2003.
Well, the investigations of these grievances began in certainly in 2003. The failure to cooperate was a failure to respond to letters.
5 different inquiries.
Yes.
But he used the fact that he had these medical conditions to explain away why he didn't cooperate.
Yes.
In the first complaint and in the second.
Yes.
But the complaints, especially the second, I think, were removed from the 2002-2003 time period in which he actually might have been seeing some doctors.
Well, you're talking about Mrs. Corpening's complaint?
No, I'm talking about his failure to cooperate with the bar.
Yeah, but the conditions continue. He continues to be depressed, he continues to see a psychologist, and he continues to be treated for the hypertension, and that has taken some toll on him. He is able to function, but the whole picture is one of someone who is no longer or was no longer able to work to the capacity that he had been working for nearly 20 years. So the suspension recommended by the panel and by the board is a 6-month suspension for counts 1 through 5, the corporating counts, which I think is appropriate. The Bar Association advised at the hearing that it thinks it's appropriate and that it run concurrently with the suspension that he is already serving, in my view, is also appropriate, request that the recommendation of the Board of Commissioners be accepted by this court and that the concurrent 6-month suspension be imposed.
Should anything happen on the first case, the 24 months or with the, was it 18 months?
18, it was 24 months, 18 months stayed on conditions.
All right, should that change as a result of this new situation he has?
I wouldn't think so. That the discipline that was imposed in that matter was imposed because of the conduct, the aggravating factors and the mitigating factors that existed at that time.
But here he has what you're suggesting is that there be no real change in the sanction at all, even though we have now a separate case altogether.
Yes. And the reason that that is so is the conduct that was involved in case number one was conduct just like this.
But it was another client.
Yes, it was another client.
With five more counts.
Well, it's five more counts, but
violations.
One estate matter, yes. Well, then you should consider this, Your Honor, that in case number one, the majority of the hearing panel recommended that the sanction should be 2 years, the entire 2 years suspended. And there was a dissenting member of the panel who recommended 2 years with 18 months stayed. And the full board adopted the dissenter's point of view, not the majority point of view. So it was a close call, may I say, at that time. It would not have been unreasonable in case number one for the entire 24 months to have been stayed. Two members of the three on the panel thought that was the appropriate result. And if you factor that into the equation, as I believe you should, then a concurrent suspension for the five counts involving Mrs. Korpening seems reasonable and appropriate. And I reiterate that Bar Counsel felt the same way at the time of the hearing. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Mr. Petrov. Ms. Mandel, you've saved a little more than 1 minute.
Your Honors, I'd like to point out we are not disputing the parsing the term treatment. I also take medication every single day, and so I am technically under treatment. But that does not equate to what occurred in this case. At the deposition on January 27, 2005, at page 15, Mr. Morosin testified that Dr. Veloz, his cardiologist, and I quote, is ready to give me back to Dr. Cass. In fact, Dr. Veloz had released him to Dr. Cass on March 25, 2002, 3 years earlier. The import of what Mr. Morosin was attempting to do when we didn't even have the records in front of us was to say that this medical condition, this blood pressure condition, was ongoing for this three-year period, when in fact it had been resolved successfully with medication 3 years earlier. He testified that he had seen Dr. Veloz every 3 to 4 months and then every 6 to 9 months. In fact, he saw Dr. Veloz three times, January 28, 2002, February 11, 2002, and March 25, 2002, when he was released back to Dr. Cass.
Counsel, would you address the legal issue again of a Section H dismissal and why this is in a different category according to your opponent?
This is in a different category because the panel found and the board also found that there was a surviving count that brings the whole record to the court. It would be, I think, absurd to suggest that a panel of the board and then the board itself could recommend a sanction as to part of a case, present it to this court, and tell this court that it was hamstrung and could not be permitted to consider the record as a whole, which is exactly what this court found in Statzer.
So you would argue that they would have to dismiss an entire case for that section to apply.
That is true.
Although, counsel, if you look at H, it does say if the evidence is insufficient to support a charge or count of misconduct, the panel may order that the complaint or count be dismissed.
And in the case where all of the counts have been dismissed under Section H, we do not have the ability to file an objection either before the board or before this court to bring the record to the court. But this court is under the rule permitted and actually required to review the record de novo. And if it finds a violation that the panel had determined not to go forward with, when it's reviewing the record as a whole, I think it's incumbent upon the court and the system that the court actually proceed with that finding. And in fact, that is what the court has done most recently in the Statzer case. Where this precise objection was brought to the court's attention by the Bar Association. And in fact, they were successful in getting the court to consider the record as a whole and the previously dismissed count.
Counsel, you mentioned when you were up before that the respondent is currently in violation of the sanction imposed on the previous two cases.
The previous one case.
The previous one case with, okay, what do you mean by that?
The suspension came about on October 26th of 2005. He was required within 30 days to submit the letters to his clients and to other counsel. He, in fact, just submitted them this week. And, in fact, today the relator has filed a brief indicating that the content of his submission to the court on the show cause order is factually untrue. And we have an affidavit from one of the clients about whom he enclosed a letter, which states that...
Okay, I just wanted to make sure that you weren't saying that the activity that was dealt with in the previous case is... he's violative of that by the alleged lying with this case.
No, this is okay. Something entirely separate.
All right, thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Mandel. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion. The marshal.